and welcome to the Trev and Ben podcast. Hello, Ben.
Hello.
How's things?
Yeah, not too bad. Not too bad. What about you?
I'm very tetchy at the moment.
You're tetchy?
Very tetchy. I don't know whether it's the whole lockdown thing getting to me. I've been losing my rag, probably disproportionately a lot this week. I've been getting very angry.
You think lockdown is why you're tetchy, or is
I don't know,
the thing about lockdown is making you tetchy?
I don't know what's making me tetchy. I've just been particularly, not even tetchy, I've been raging. Raging this week. For an example, I'll just give you an example, right? I was watching The Chase, something I enjoy very much normally. Yeah. And I was watching the other day, and just one of the contestants, it's not that he was a rubbish contestant, it was just something about his demeanor, and I just found myself sitting at the telly going, oh, just shut the fuck up, you boring piece of shit.
Wow.
And calling him more than that, words that I won't use right now. I used the C-bomb quite a few times.
And, really?
Yeah, he was just really irritating. Because the thing was, he was answering the questions, and he was just he wasn't even really thinking about the question. He was just throwing ridiculous answers out. And then when he got the wrong, he was kind of going, oh, like as if he'd known the real answers. The guess wasn't anywhere near it.
Because when you started talking about this being because of lockdown, I know what you mean now, that because we're in lockdown, it's making you extra tetchy. I thought you meant about the whole Dominic Cummings thing.
Oh, well, I mean, obviously that's angry anyway. That makes you angry. I mean, he's going. Good riddance. But it just means some other twat will be bought in.
I know.
And then I got very angry. This really annoyed me, right? So I was doing my daily exercise, right? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not pushing for a triathlon. I'm just doing a bit of exercise a day just to ensure I don't get deep vein thrombosis. Do you know what I mean?
Right.
I set myself a little target every day, right? And I like to listen to a podcast or something while I'm doing it. And then the other day, I thought, I've got about 10 minutes left to get to my target. And you know, some days at the end of exercise, it feels really hard work.
Yeah.
So I thought, I'll put a song on that is quite long, and I know that that'll take me to pretty much the target. So I went onto YouTube and put American Pie on, right? So
interesting choice.
Well, it's a great song, and it's 8.5 minutes, right, wherever it is. And I knew I had about 10 minutes left to go. And it had adverts at the start, which is annoying anyway, but I thought it was fine. It's on YouTube. And then I'm doing the exercise. I'm listening. I'm sort of singing along to American Pie. It's making the last 10 minutes of exercise a little bit easier. And then with about 7 minutes of the song gone, it stops and a fucking advert comes in. Who's designed that? That in the middle of a song, an advert comes in. Like, what? What a piece of wank.
I mean, I must admit, I watch a lot of YouTube videos and I get fairly sick of the constant adverts, and they're usually always the same adverts over and over.
Oh, God, yes. But not in the middle of a song. Who's come up with this algorithm?
I don't know. I watch a lot of vlogs and things where it kind of makes sense to have adverts slotted in, and they don't really slot them in where it makes sense either. But in the middle of a song, it must just be saying this video, because it would be classed as a video, is over a certain time long, so let's stick an advert in it.
Oh, I was furious, but I mean, disproportionately so. I was screaming at the phone, who's done this? So that annoyed me. And then,
do you remember what the advert was for?
Oh, fuck knows, mate. It was some, I don't know. I was
just saw the red mist.
I was just too annoyed. And then you sort of have a little conversation with yourself afterwards. You think, well, come on, Trev. It's a small thing. And then I tell you what really pushed me over the edge.
Go on.
And this might upset some people. I'm not having a go at the bloke here, right?
Okay, I'm nervous.
I might sort of. So on Saturday, you said, are you doing Jay's pub quiz tonight?
Yeah, that's right.
Now, Jay is a wonderful man. He's done this pub quiz. He's raised lots of money for charity. He's got an MBE or OBE, whatever he got. Well done to Jay. Brilliant man, right? I didn't do it Saturday, but I said to you, I might try and catch up with the quiz.
That's right, yeah.
So Sunday, I put it on, started the quiz. Like I say, Jay's a great, but I'm not having a go at Jay per se. But one of his questions pushed me over the edge, mate. And I gave up with the quiz. I was like, I'm not doing this quiz anymore.
Really?
Yeah, it pissed me off so much.
Before you carry on with this story, I will say that the petty part of me instantly thought, well, I'll chalk that one as up a win for me then.
You can have it. You can have it.
You tapped out. What was the question that sent you over the edge?
It was a question. Now, I might get some expert come on and tell me that I'm wrong here.
I'd love to know if I got it right or not.
The question was something along the lines of, what else is a crane fly known as?
A daddy long legs.
What answer did he give?
Dragonfly.
Dragonfly. It's not a fucking dragonfly. Never. It's never been a dragonfly. It never will be a dragonfly. And that pushed me over the edge, mate. It's like, I can't do the rest of this quiz because that is just ridiculous.
I hate to tell you this, but if you'd stuck with it for a few minutes more, he came back and said, anyone who said daddy long legs, give yourself the point.
Well, that's fine. But did he say, I've got it wrong, it's not a dragonfly?
No, because
you shouldn't get a point for dragonfly. It's not a dragonfly.
Well, you were very strict with me the other day. What was the question about Germany that I was very upset
about? Oh, no, he was very right. It was in which country was Stasi, the secret police or something?
That's right. And I said Germany.
No,
he specifically said it has to be East Germany.
Yeah, that's absolutely spot on.
Oh, okay. I felt hard done by, to be honest.
That's absolutely spot on. So, do you know what I mean? I've got to calm down, I think, Ben. I'm getting too stressed out about little things.
I got stressed out this week because of lockdown, but mine was lockdown specific. Going back to Dominic Cummings, he's now quit.
Yes.
He was announced he was quitting in December, and Boris Johnson turned around and said, you know what, you can leave now.
Apparently, it was something, didn't he call, what was the... He had a nickname for Boris's wife.
I didn't know that.
Did you not know that? This was the thing that apparently pushed Boris over the edge, that texts were going around. Because apparently Boris's wife, I think, doesn't like Dominic Cummings, and they've been clashing or something. I'm going to find out what the nickname was.
Is it his fiancé or his wife?
Oh, fiancé, I don't know. He's a bit of fluff. Well... Whatever you want to call it. What's her name? Carrie Simmons, isn't it?
Something like that.
Yeah, I'm going to try and find the nickname. So anyway, what pissed you off about it?
Well, what pissed me off was, and don't get me wrong, I'm pleased that this asshole is finally leaving and is not going to be basically in charge of the country anymore. But what annoyed me was, you know, the whole Rose Garden speech where he came onto the country unprecedented that someone who wasn't a politician was addressing the nation like
this. Yeah.
He refused to go. He refused to apologise. He said he'd done a 60-mile round trip to test his eyesight in a car with his wife and child. Then he admits he went to Barnard Castle, or to Durham for a 250-mile round trip. And he still refuses to go. The nation wanted him to go and he refused. And then... he has some sort of little internal spat and he's taking his pram and he's going home.
Yeah. Oh, he's a horrible man. I did think with Trump losing the election and Cummings going, has the world, has like Mother Earth got to the stage as we near the end of 2020 where it's just like with coronavirus, with all the shit, with the shit show that 2020 has been, it's just spitting out some of the evil.
It seems like it's trying to correct itself, but it's got a lot of making up to do.
Princess Nut-Nut was apparently the...
charming.
...unflattering nickname that they were using for Carrie Simmons.
So he'll have an entire country... I know there were a few exceptions and some people thought he should stay. I don't know many of them myself, but he had all of that and he had the gall to stick it out. I mean, because of some internal little ding-dong with Boris's, as you say, bit of fluff, he's stormed off and he's finally gone.
Good riddance to him.
Oh, fuck him.
So here's something I've been reading up on this week, Ben, that I'll be interested in your thoughts on. Have you heard of the computer simulation theory?
No, I haven't.
It's kind of like what The Matrix is all about, that we are living within a computer simulation, essentially. We are just bits of code, but we have consciousness.
Yes.
So I don't know how you feel about that straight off the bat.
Well, wasn't it Descartes who said... cogito ergo sum.
I think therefore I am, yes.
Yeah, which basically means he pondered the same essential question, which is, how do I know I'm alive and not part of a simulation or something to that effect? And the conclusion he came to is that if he's introspecting on that question at all, then he does exist somewhere in some form. Cogito ergo sum, I think, therefore I am. Can we just snag this little bit of the podcast? It's the most intelligent I've ever sounded.
Why you say that, Ben? I mean...
can we cut this and put it as a promo or something?
So, but I've been reading about this thing, right? So there's a guy called Nick Bostrom, right, who wrote a sort of theory on this a few years ago. He's he's a proper Oxford University professor. So he's an intelligent man, right?
Okay.
So he wrote this sort of idea. It sort of suggests that if humanity can survive long enough to create technology capable of running convincing simulations of reality, it will create many such simulations, and therefore there'll be lots of simulated realities and only one base reality. So statistically, it's probably more likely that we live in a simulation right now.
Right.
But the thing I was starting to think about this was, if we're all in a computer simulation, I mean, when they say this sort of potential post-human population, this post-human society who are running this simulation, is it suggesting that they are trying to recreate a past so that they are so far into the future that they're trying to simulate the beginnings of man? Or is it people on another planet that are simulating the whole Earth? I don't quite understand that bit, whether we're just a whole simulation, the whole Earth is a simulation, yet and the people running it are from another planet, another alien, an alien life form, perhaps.
Yeah.
Or is it some geeky kid in a bedroom playing some weird computer game?
The kind of depressing answer is you'd never know.
Well, no, of course we'd never know. We'd never know.
So it's not really worth worrying about, is it?
Oh, it's just been doing what I did this thing. I started reading about it, then I listened to a podcast all about it, and it just started getting me thinking about, you know, essentially somewhere in the future, there is a massive computer running this simulation that we're all living in. And then I started to think, well, what sort of piece of shit computer are they using if this is what they're simulating? I mean, look, it must be like some sort of Spectrum ZX81 piece of kit they're using. I mean, I always think computers are a bit shit. And if this is the simulation they've created, then it's making life, everything in life's a bit shit, isn't it?
Well, unless the point of their simulation is that the simulation they've created of this world that we inhabit is supposed to be to test humans under stressful conditions, such as the year 2020.
Yeah, but they're sort of post-human. So, I mean, it wouldn't really matter to them how humans would react. Or just from a historical point of view, I suppose.
Well, just because they're a superior being to us who have created a simulation that happens to be the world we're living in, doesn't mean that they're at a point where necessarily they can't learn from our behaviours and further their own experiments, or we could be essentially an experiment, a science test for them.
So they're going to see how, so they run a simulation. So they create a virus. So they put into the program coronavirus, and they see how we react, and then they can learn from that. And if they ever get a virus that threatens their very being, they can look at how well we've dealt with it,
precisely,
and learn from that. I don't
believe any of this is likely, but it's no less or more ridiculous than the idea that this is a simulation in the first place.
I suppose so. And then it got me thinking about space. So would space be part of the simulation? Or when we go into space, I was watching the rocket launch last night and I was thinking about this. Is that a way for us to almost get into the workings of the computer? Are we kind of leaving the simulation and going into the workings of the computer? You know, they say like the universe expands by whatever it is. There's that, you know, it's expanding all the time. Is that just them adding memory to the computer?
You know, when I sat down to do this recording, I wasn't expecting to get a headache quite this quickly.
Well, I'm sorry, but this is what I've been reading about this week, and it's just a fascinating thing. And then I started reading other bits about it. So here's a weird thing, right? So some people apparently claim to remember TV coverage of Nelson Mandela's death in the 1980s.
I've heard of this. This is called the Mandela Effect.
The Mandela Effect.
I've heard of this.
So, but in, some people say it's supposedly proof that whoever's in charge of the simulation is changing the past, or alternatively, evidence of a parallel universe.
Yeah, I mean, who is... I mean, if you walk past a homeless person on a park bench sipping from a bottle of beer,
yeah,
then, and they were rambling about this, you would dismiss it. So why is it just because some other person's saying it, you're taking it seriously?
I'm not taking it seriously. I just think it's a really interesting thing that I've sort of heard obviously about it in The Matrix and all that, but just suddenly reading this stuff a bit more, it just makes you wonder, doesn't it? And if this is a fairly new theory, is this something that in 2,000 years' time would lead to some major religion?
Sure, why not?
I mean, it could be that, you know, as the story progresses over the next few hundreds or thousands of years, that there will ultimately be the name of some creator, the man who said, maybe even this professor who came up with the idea. He's like the prophet, and he'll become the messenger of the gods. This is the idea. It just fascinates me how these things start. This could be the birth of a new religion.
Going back to your idea about, is space the way to escape what this simulation could be?
Yeah.
If this is a mere simulation and we're just a piece of software on some alien computer somewhere, why would they leave some weird loophole where we can escape it? And B, if we did manage to blast through space and out of the simulation, I mean, surely that would either crash the simulation. It's not like we'd suddenly be on their ship with them, is it? We're part of software code.
Well, who knows? Who knows how we might mutate within the simulation? I mean, if you put a virus into a computer, things will behave in a way that you're not expecting. And that maybe is what happened. They've put the virus in, COVID-19. They've programmed that in to see how we all cope. And what we're going to do is we're going to react in a way that they haven't expected. We may infiltrate their program.
If I get a virus on my computer, yeah, then I imagine the following things will happen. The software that I'm trying to use will simply crash and not work. If one day my computer gets a virus that causes a small rocket ship to fly out of the DVD tray and people are now in my room from some planet from a simulation I didn't know I was running, then I might give you a call and say you were right.
But you don't know whether something might have come out of your computer, because we would presumably sort of almost... I don't know, if you were to come out of the computer, we might be in the workings of the computer. We haven't necessarily come out of the computer into someone's room, lab, you know, the computer room, whatever you want to call it. But we might just be in the workings of the computer, you know. And maybe the COVID-19 is the crash. Maybe that's the crash of the computer. That was something that they didn't expect. And we've now got this virus that they need to clean.
Can I get Mr. Conspiracy on as a co-host instead of you? Because he was honestly making more sense.
I don't know what your problem is, Ben. It's just it's something I've been reading this week. It's been interesting to read it. And I just thought it was worth the discussion.
Do you think?
Now, last week's podcast, Ben, we got talking about kids' TV shows and their theme tunes.
Yes.
And I played you some of my favourites. They seem to have gone down well, by the way.
Very good.
And I said to you, can you bring some of yours this week to the... bring yours to the party.
Yeah.
So what have you got for us?
Well, I've picked out five, which I think, I'm sure there are more iconic shows of my generation's childhood, but I think these were the ones that I specifically... hold in my head as very prominent. I think most people, if you were born around the late 80s, you will know what these are.
Okay.
So here's the first one.
This is 29 Acacia Road, and this is Eric, the schoolboy who leads an amazing double life. A When Eric eats a banana, an amazing transformation occurs.
Oh, it's a good choice, Ben.
Eric is Banana Man, ever alert for the call to action.
Now, the amazing thing about this one is there's no words.
There's no words?
There's no, like, sung Banana Man.
Oh, no, yeah, you confused me when you said there were no words. I thought there's plenty of words. there's no lyrics, is what you mean.
No lyrics. No. You know, it's not a full-on song, but it's still iconic, isn't it?
Yeah, and I was sort of thinking about it when you asked me to provide some for this podcast, and I sort of thought, that's such a shit superhero. Was that a sort of government-driven cartoon to encourage kids to eat bananas?
I don't think so. No, I think it's
he didn't really have any powers, did he? I mean, he could fly, but that was about it, wasn't it?
He was quite strong. I mean, well, considering he started off as a little boy and then he'd eat a banana and then he'd grow into this big, muscly superhero with sort of super strength. Did he have any other things? Did he have, like... I've got all the Banana Man on DVD. I haven't watched them for years, but I have got them all. But I can't think... Did he have, like, laser vision or anything like that?
I don't know. I think they probably played fast and loose with what his powers were. It's probably one of those superheroes where they didn't really properly establish what his powers were. They just changed it from week to week and just said, oh, because Banana Man.
I love Banana Man for a couple of reasons. One... it was voiced by the Goodies.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, so you got Tim Brooke Taylor, Graham Garden, and Bill Oddie doing the voices. So that's extraordinary. And here's another thing about Banana Man. Even to this day, you know the bit where he eats the banana?
Yeah.
And he grows, and you sort of see his legs grow a little bit?
Yeah.
Well, when I stretch, I feel like Banana Man. You know when you stretch and you feel that little pull just sort of by your ankle? Area.
Sort of.
I still feel like Banana Man when I do that.
Okay, that's a fascinating insight into your life.
Banana Man is a good choice. And again, like because of those voices, I mean, that was another thing about those sort of shows when you were a kid is the famous people that do the voices. I mean, Super Ted. Do you remember Super Ted?
I've heard of it. I don't think I ever saw it.
I'm not sure who did the voice of Super Ted, but Spotty, who was like the spaceman companion, that was John Pertwee.
Oh.
And then you had Danger Mouse, of course, was Terry Scott and David Jason.
Yeah.
I mean, you had great voice. I'm sure today you've got cartoons of the new Danger Mouse is it's Alexander Armstrong plays Danger Mouse, doesn't he? Who's that? I don't know who the new Penfold is.
I don't know.
I think it's Kevin Eldon.
Okay.
So I suppose today you do get big voices and well-known people doing the kids' shows, but that was a thing when you were a kid. It was who's going to narrate or act in this particular show. Like Roy Kinnear. Do you remember Roy Kinnear?
Again, it's another name I have heard of, but I can't put a face to it.
He used to narrate Bertha. That was another great show. Bertha, lovely Bertha. Sometimes I think you're a dream.
Shall we move on to the next one to stop you singing?
Okay.
This is another classic. It's Bodger and Badger.
I was going to say the only thing I can remember about Bodger and Badger, it's not my time at all, was something about mashed potato.
Yes, that's right. He was operated by, it was basically, the Badger was a puppet and he was operated by a guy called Andy Cunningham, sadly no longer with us. And he would basically make a 9-series TV show essentially about getting hit in the face with mashed potato.
Which, enough.
As I was reflecting on it again the other night, thinking about all these theme tunes, I thought that's an incredibly dangerous method or message to tell children who might think it's funny to take a pot of piping hot mashed potato lava off the stovetop and blast their parents in the face with it. That could cause all sorts of third degree burns.
Well, yes, and also it's a terrible message to take. It's a bit of a carb overload if that's all you're having. I've got to say, bit of a charmless theme tune, I felt.
Really?
Yeah, I just felt like a generic children's TV show theme, nothing really special. But then it's because it wasn't the show that I watched. To you, that theme tune must evoke all kinds of memories of being a kid.
The big bit of that theme tune is where you get to shout along with it, where it goes, everybody knows Badger loves mashed potato.
Okay. And
that was the bit you'd all join in with.
So it's the interactive element that you love about it. Yeah, no, that's fair enough. I get that.
A bit like, now I never saw it, but isn't there something about Cracker Jack, you're all supposed to shout?
Cracker Jack, yeah.
It's kind of the poor man's Cracker Jack in that respect.
Okay, what you got next?
The next one I have is actually a bit of a creepy one because, as you know, I do have a bit of a fondness for the macabre and always have. So this is Goosebumps.
Oh, I don't remember this. Oh, good spooky start.
Again, it's another lyricless theme tune.
Yeah, now what visuals were going on?
Oh, lots of sort of crypts and mist and scary looking stuff. I can't really remember the visuals of it all that well. They're based on the books of the same name by an author called R.L. Stine, who I didn't read many books as a kid, but I always loved the Goosebumps books. And then they made a TV show out of it, and it was required viewing in my house. Quite creepy, I'm sure you'd agree. Goosebumps.
Viewer beware, you're in for a scare. Well, a bit Vincent Price-esque.
It was a bit, wasn't it?
That's way after my time, I think, Goosebumps. But it's quite like, I like that theme tune. It's got all the elements it would need, spookiness.
Okay.
Yeah, like it.
Now, another one which had the ability to be strange at times, was Round the Twist. Did you ever watch that?
Yes. Now, this was, they lived in like a lighthouse.
That's right. It was set in Australia, I believe.
Yes, that's right. Yeah. Now, this was a great show, but I don't remember much of it except that they lived in a lighthouse.
Well, then this is going to bring it all flooding back to you.
Oh, I don't remember that bit.
I'll wait for it.
I remember Have You Ever.
See, it's coming back.
Yeah. How strange things happen. Are you going round the twist? Have you ever? Yes. Ever felt like this? How strange things happen. Are you going round the twist? Well, have you heard the word about the bird and the spider? It wiggled and wriggled and jiggled inside it. Well, have you ever? Ever felt like this? It's a great theme tune. It's got, what I like about it is like a lot of theme tunes, which I want to talk a bit more about in a minute. It matches its time era. So that little bit in the middle, which isn't quite a rap, but it's almost got that late 1980s rap element about it.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
I was tempted to throw in The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air as one of my TV theme tunes as growing up, because I definitely grew up with that.
Okay, yeah.
Which is a start-to-finish rap, that theme tune, but I didn't. The final one I've gone for...
Can I just ask before we move on? Is there any episode of Round the Twist that jumps to mind? Like, can you tell me one storyline? Because I can't remember any.
Only one.
Go on.
And I don't remember the sort of meat of the story or how we got there. And I'm pretty sure we've talked about it on this podcast before. It was an episode where... and sorry about the crass nature of this episode, but it's the only one I remember. Boys... having a literal pissing contest.
Oh, you did tell me about this once before, yes.
That's right, up a wall. And I forget the reason why. The little boy becomes briefly possessed by some sort of demon whose sole purpose of the episode seems to be to help his piss go further up the wall than the other boys.
I mean, imagine that writing meeting. You can imagine they were a bit short of ideas that day. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, we've got to cut with a, you know, we're one short for the series. So what can we do? And a couple of them go for a piss at the same time. And they just relive childhood memories of pissing up a wall. They come back with this great idea. And then, like, the boss says, yeah, well, what you got to remember is that this is a spooky show. Where's the spooky end? Oh, I don't know. Let's just have a pissing up the wall demon that possesses one of the kids. I mean, what a great plot for a show.
Think of all the great TV shows that have never been made, but somehow that one did.
Yeah, yeah. All right, what's your last one?
My final choice is something I watched when I was a lot younger, obviously. It's Play Days.
Oh, Play Days?
The Play Bus! But where does it go? Where does it stop? Watch for the sign of the lollipop.
Jazzy, little bit funky.
A little bit, yeah. Now this is the crucial moment.
Stop! It's the Y-Bird stop.
And that would be the moment it got turned off in my house. Right. I hated the Y-Bird stop.
Well, what happened to the Y-Bird stop?
It was just revolved around some narcissistic, annoying owl thing, the Y-Bird. And also the Peggy Patch stop, that got switched off fucking immediately. The other ones I could sort of tolerate, but those two in particular drove me up the wall. So as you say, a bit jazzy.
It reminded me of almost music you'd hear in a supermarket or, you know, a department store back in the day.
Yeah. So I liked that one, but it got irritating quite quickly. And also when I was listening to the theme tune back, this strange bus where no one knows where it goes and no one knows where it stops, that's no way to operate a bus service, is it?
It's not, no. Because it used to be, am I right in saying that it was the Play Bus before it became Play Days? It was the show called Play Bus.
I've always known it as Play Days. You might be right. I think it was the Play Bus of Play Days, but you could well be right. I don't know.
Because I think it kind of took over, this is way after my time, but I think because Play School ran for years, we talked about Play School last week, and I think when they axed Play School, they brought in the Play Bus.
Ah.
But I don't know whether that was the name of the show or whether it became Play Days. But there we are, the Play Days. Because at Play School, you, every day they would go through one of the windows. There was the round window, the square window, whatever the other windows were. Whereas this one stopped at stops. Say, why they had to axe Play School for essentially the same idea is ridiculous.
I had the same thing. You know what I was saying about if it's the Y-Bird stop, I'll turn it off.
Yeah.
Do you remember a thing that Neil Buchanan was on, which was called Zap?
Oh, I don't remember Zap, no.
Zap was essentially a giant sort of comic book strip from memory with windows in it. And the camera would pan over all these different places, all these different stories we might be going to. And if it was Neil Buchanan, it would usually be an Art Attack type thing. And that was quite fun. So I'd stick with that. But there was a few of those windows that I just think, fuck this, I'm out.
Neil Buchanan, he used to be in a thing when I was a kid called Number 73.
Is this his band?
No. I don't know what his band's called. But this was a kids' TV Saturday morning show on ITV. Right. And that had a brilliant theme tune. I wish I had that to hand. That had a great theme tune. Right. And Neil Buchanan was one of the, that must have been one of his first TV jobs. But also, Sandy Toksvig played this character called Ethel. Right.
I think you've told me about this before.
Yeah, because I wrote to them and I've still got the postcard that they sent back to me. As a kid, I always thought that this, they'd written this postcard. It was all personally written. And when I found it again recently, I realized that it's just a printed postcard, but somebody had handwritten just because basically Ethel, Sandy Toksvig, left the show. Right. And on the show, they made out she'd gone on holiday. And she didn't come back. And I remember when I wrote to them, I put, is Ethel still on holiday? Because Ethel was like one of my favourite characters. She used to do like this sandwich game, which was great. And they just wrote, P.S. Ethel is still on holiday.
Oh, that's quite nice.
And I've still got the postcard. It was like just like a postcard, but I've still got it.
It does sound like a bit of an ominous euphemism, you know, like how your parents might tell you that your dog's gone to live on a farm.
Yeah.
Auntie Ethel's still on holiday.
Yeah, I mean, we all know that Sandy Toksvig is still with us, so thankfully that wasn't the case. So there's just a couple of things that I wanted to just talk to you about theme tunes. So last week I was playing you some of my favourites, and I got a message from Faye, one of our listeners, who said that she could sing along to all of the ones that I played last week.
Okay. Right?
But she was a little bit disappointed that I hadn't included one. And this was a show called Ulysses.
I've never heard of it.
Now, I must admit, when I heard the theme tune, that came flooding back to me. But I wasn't a fan of this show. I must have watched it enough to know the theme tune. But this is the thing, a bit like the Banana Man theme tune. This is the difference, I think, between TV shows, kids' TV shows of the 70s and 80s, maybe early 90s, and them in your era and today, right? And I might be completely wrong here, but this is the impression I get, is that the theme tune was such a integral part of the show.
Okay.
And they'd be quite long. You know, it was a bit like they'd tell the musicians to go and come up with a theme tune. And you know, there's that episode of Frasier where he has to create a jingle and he ends up creating this sort of orchestral masterpiece.
Yeah.
I reckon it was a bit like that because they would go off and they'd come up with these huge songs and intros. So Ulysses is a very long intro. It's about a minute and a half or more. Right? And it starts with a story. It tells the story.
It is the 31st century. Ulysses killed the giant Cyclops when he rescued the children and his son Telemachus. But the ancient gods of Olympus are angry and threaten a terrible revenge.
Mortals, you defy the gods? I sentence you to travel among unknown stars. Until you find the kingdom of Hades, your bodies will stay as lifeless as stone.
Ulysses, the way back to Earth has been wiped from my memory.
Father! Oh, Father!
You are alive, my son.
So that's before we even get to the theme tune.
That's incredible.
That's 46 seconds of just setting up the story every week, so you know exactly where we're going. And then we get to the theme tune, which I think you'll agree is something incredible. You ready?
Ready.
Listen to that rock edge. It reminds me of, like, Rainbow.
It does have a touch of that to it. It's way too long.
No, it's not. This is the problem, you see. Your generation have no patience. I mean, you can't beat it, really, can you?
It's so long.
But this is what I mean. Like, I think we were more patient as kids.
No, I don't. I think I'm onto this. I think this is someone who thinks, right, the longer we make the theme tune, the less effort we have to put into the episodes, because it'll almost be time to finish the show by the time the intro's done.
Well, no, because this is the other thing I was thinking was, I don't think they do this these days, but when I was a kid, we had epic theme tunes like that, but then you'd have epic cartoon stories that would run. But so the last thing I'm going to play you is, which I can't believe I left out last week, is The Mysterious Cities of Gold.
Never heard of it.
Which I am rewatching at the moment with my godchildren. And it's 38 episodes.
Good God.
And it's an ongoing story. It's not like they're just one-off episodes. It's an ongoing story. And I don't think they would do that these days. Like Ulysses would have been like that. Willy Fogg was like that. You know, do you remember Willy Fogg?
No.
80 days around the world. No, okay.
But Phileas Fogg?
Well, it was based on the story, but Willy Fogg was like, I think he was a lion.
Okay.
Going around the world. And then Cities of Gold was this epic, and I don't think children would have the patience to sit through that. And, you know, this would run for, as I say, 38 weeks, 39 weeks, whatever it was. And you'd watch every week, you'd follow the story, and the Cities of Gold theme tune. My godchildren, they try and cover my mouth, because I will sing along to this every time. And they don't like me singing along to it. And again, I'm not going to play you the whole thing because it has a huge intro of 47 seconds of just build up to the theme tune. I mean, already, like, your generation's like, oh, no, I'm not dealing with that. You know, my generation's like, yeah, bring it on, 47 seconds. And then you get into the full-on theme tune, which, again, is pretty epic. All right, you ready?
Okay.
Children of the sun, see your time has just begun. Searching for your ways, through adventures every day.
This is the best bit.
Okay. If you told me this was a Boney M record, I'd have believed you.
Brilliant. It's got that South American feel. Got a middle eight, I'd call this, which it doesn't need, but it's there. You think maybe it's coming to the end? Not yet.
Well, there you go. So, Trev, you may remember I recently told you about me losing my wallet.
Oh, yes, yes.
And although it turned out it was one of the nicest men in the world who went out of his way to help me.
Yes.
I briefly suspected that he might be about to steal my identity and he was a complete dickhead.
Yes.
Which is, says more about me than it does about him, believe me. So that sort of fell under the slight lack of gratitude topic. And we've had a story in from JB, Johnny, our friend John in Guildford on Twitter.
Hello, John. Thanks for getting in touch.
Thank you very much, John. And it's a cracking story as well.
Okay.
He says, following on from your lack of gratitude theme, I found a handbag on the estate where our shoot is based. It looked like it had been thrown over a hedge after being stolen. I had a good look through the contents and managed to find an email address. I took the bag back home with me for safekeeping. Upon entering the house, my missus' jaw hit the floor. Turns out the bag was a Hermes Birkin. And then he puts in brackets, no, me neither.
That's good, because I was going to ask you.
He said, basically, it's a handbag. And knew they're worth between £10,000 and £20,000.
Wow. I mean, that's going to be more value than anything in that bag.
Absolutely. So some idiot's stolen it and then thrown it over a hedge. So well done. Apparently, it was the bag my missus has always dreamed of having. So he continued his search for the owner and managed to track her down. We arranged to meet so I could reunite them. When we met, she was fairly thankful, but nothing like, wow, my ridiculously expensive handbag. How immensely honest of you. The whole time, she kept her hands firmly in the front hoodie pocket. In my mind, I was imagining a brown envelope with around £800 to £1,000 in it.
Wow, I mean, that's quite a leap of faith there, John, that that's going to be the reward, but fair enough.
If the bag's worth 20K...
Oh, I suppose, yeah.
So he thought he might get that as a thank you. And then he goes on to say, I was wrong. She grabbed her bag, turned around, and got back in her car. Just before driving off, she wound down her window, and I thought, oh, I'm reading this from John. I'm thinking this is the moment you get the big cash injection. She wound down her window and said, if you find a Louis Vuitton bag, that's also mine. Bye.
No way.
In hindsight, she had probably had the bags insured and all the money and couldn't care less about her hedgerow customized bag. And he still couldn't decide if he did the right thing or should have kept it. I've replied to him. I just basically said, well, I think what you did was the right thing to do. It's commendable. But in hindsight, I'd have fucking kept it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's the right thing to do because, well, if you're anything like me, John, you would have had that guilt hanging over you the whole time. Every time your missus stepped out with it, there'd be a guilt attached to that bag. Do you know what I mean? There'd be no joy to be had from that bag. But when you meet such ungracious and ungrateful people like that, you just think, well, why did I bother? Why did I put myself out for you?
I absolutely agree. I think he's done the right thing, but such a lack of gratitude. No one has benefited from this story at all. John has got out of his way, wasted his own time. And this horrible cow clearly couldn't give a shit whether she gets her bag back or not. And then the gall to shout at him, oh, if you find my Louis Vuitton shit. let me know.
I mean, this is the sort of person who's got more money than sense. Do you know what I mean? Because if you've got two of them, you've just got way too much money, really. Because I'm assuming a Louis Vuitton bag is an expensive one as well.
Oh, I would have thought so, yes.
But then to have both gone, you've got to assume that that's a burglary in the house, because you wouldn't go out with both of those and lose them both to a robbery, would you?
No, I mean, but just how stupidly rich would this person need to be to not think a small reward was in order? I mean, I agree with you. I think £800 to £1,000 is a little bit generous, but nothing at all. What a slap in the face.
Although, imagine if she'd given you like a fiver and you've gone, oh, that's great, thank you very much. And then she shouted, oh, but if you find the Louis Vuitton bag, you'd look at that fiver then in a different way, wouldn't you? Go, well, you've lost that as well. That's probably about 40 grand's worth of bag. And you're giving me a fiver. I mean, you know, that would change the whole sort of response to the reward, I think.
I think you're right. It's just staggering. And yes, any more stories of, you know, lack of gratitude, please send them in. So, Trev, I wanted to talk to you about what happened to me. I'm on holiday now for a week.
Nice.
I've not been suspended. But last week, I had someone attempt to bribe me.
Bribe you?
Yeah.
Well, I hope it was something decent. I mean, is this like a proper bung, a proper sort of bribe of a few hundred quid, a few thousand quid maybe?
Well, we'll get to that. Basically, I was doing my usual route and someone approached me and said, oh, I see you've had a haircut. And I speak to lots of people a lot of the time. And I just said, oh, yeah, needed to. And they said, oh, okay, how you been? I said, yeah, okay. Yeah, not bad. Yeah. And thanks. And he said, you don't remember me, do you? I said, no, not really. Sorry. He said, that's okay. I'm the guttering guy.
The guttering guy.
He said, you gave out a load of leaflets for me last time. And my heart dropped. I thought, oh God, I do remember you. Basically, this guy I'd dealt with before stopped me on the street and badgered me to hand out loads of flyers through people's letterboxes.
Well, hang on. Before we move on, I mean, this sounds... Again, that must break some kind of rule of your work. You can't just be handing out people's leaflets willy-nilly.
It completely breaks the law, and I'm fairly sure it's a sackable offence. So he gave me a handful of leaflets this original time that I'd forgotten, and I then walked around delivering the rest of the post. And I had to sort of do sleight of hand tricks to pretend I was posting his leaflets whilst palming them and getting rid of them in the bag.
So you didn't post any of them?
No, I did not commit the crime, but I took the leaflets to shut him up because he was not letting it drop. And this time round, he started saying, oh, you could do it again for me, you could do it again for me. And I said, no, I really shouldn't, you know, because it could get me sacked. It could get me in trouble. No one will know. It'd be fine. And he's probably right. No one really would know. But I can't take the risk,
post your own fucking annoying leaflets, you little twat.
Yes, which is very much what I thought. And then he won't let it drop again. And he goes, oh, look, let me just give you 15. I'll give you 15. And I said, 15, right. Okay, I'll take 15 and no more.
Now you've entered into negotiations with him. Well done.
Yeah, I know. But it's the same tactic as last time. It's just get rid of him at all costs. And then he says, oh, come here. I'll give you this. I thought, ooh, a bribe. he offered me a half-eaten chicken wrap.
A half-eaten chicken wrap.
Yeah. That was what he thought would seal the deal.
Now, when you say half-eaten, has he eaten half of what he's offering you, or is this the other half in a container that he hasn't touched?
To be clear and to be fair, it's the second situation there. It was a half. It was an opened second half of a sandwich. There weren't bite marks in it or anything like that.
Still don't know how long that's been sitting around in his
precisely
pokey little van or wherever he's in.
So I just said, no, really, I'm not hungry. That's fine. Just give me the 15 leaflets and I'll be off. And then he presented a wad of about 250 leaflets, and I just said to him, that's a little bit more than 15 now, isn't it? And he said, oh, no, it'll be fine. So I just said, okay, And then I thought, shit, now I'm in a bit of trouble, because what I have to do now is he's going to keep an eye on me like he did last time, watching, going down the same road he caught me on before. So I thought on my feet and I said, I tell you what, mate, I won't do it here because I did these houses for you last time. I want to be clear, I didn't. So what I'll do is I'll take these leaflets and I'll do them at some houses round on the next street. So that way I won't be doubling up and wasting your leaflets. And he said, oh yeah, good idea. Do them on some posh houses.
Oh, some posh houses,
yeah,
right.
Take it to the posh houses. I said, all right, mate, we'll do.
Can I just ask then about the quality of the leaflets? Like, are these leaflets going to entice the higher class clientele that he's after?
I very much doubt it. not only because they were cheap, badly done little bits of white paper with his logo on it,
right?
Probably from an inkjet printer. The other reason that those posh people won't ever see them is because they're currently on my bedside table as a coaster.
Excellent. Well done. So this man, like, was there a van?
He had a van. No official signing on the van, I don't remember.
Right.
And he did promise me that the next time he sees me, not this time, but the next time he sees me, he'll sort me out with a drink.
Oh, I thought he was going to offer you two chicken wraps the next time.
So I've had the offer of half a chicken wrap and a fictitious future drink.
I mean, this man sounds just such a wide boy. Do you know what I mean? Just some bloke. Like the guy knocked on my door last week and wanted my guts cleared. Similar sort of thing. Just some...
You know, it was probably the same bloke.
Probably wasn't. Was he Irish?
No, he wasn't, though.
No. I mean, look, to be fair, he's out, he's trying to make a living. But deliver your own bloody leaflets, mate. Do you know what I mean? Or pay for some official marketing.
Yeah, and I think one of his logic, or some of his logic, was that, oh, I'm going to these doors anyway, so I might as well. It's not really the point. You've got to pay for these things.
Yeah.
And in currency, not half-eaten food. and I sort of flashed back to you telling me about your gutter salesman, and I sort of said, it's the perfect job to not do, because you're not exactly going to get a ladder and go up there and check it's been done properly, are you?
No.
And I reckon this guy was exactly the sort of chancer who would do exactly that.
Yeah. So is that to be bribed, like, if you're going to do that, offer a decent bribe as well. If you want to try and entice somebody to potentially put their job on the line and post your two-bit piece of tat through someone's letterbox, then offer a decent bribe. You know, at least offer you, like, I mean, what would be a decent, what would you have accepted if you were going to post them and put your job on the line? What would have been a decent bribe? What would you have accepted as a bribe?
Well, of course, I'd have accepted nothing as a bribe if anyone from Royal Mail ever hears this. But I would say you'd have much more luck if you were to suggest to the person, oh, I'll give you 20 quid and here's 100, 200 leaflets, since you're going to the door anyway, just tuck them through. They'll never know it came with you. It could have been posted by anyone at any time, which is all true. And then you've managed to get 20 quid's worth of advertising in 200 houses. That's more appealing than a half-eaten sausage or chicken wrap or whatever it was.
Yeah, yeah. I wonder how often this happens. You know, because some of the shit that gets put through my letterbox, we talked about a few weeks ago, what do you call it,
door-to-door mail.
So I get a lot of that, and now I'm beginning to wonder, like, I had a thing put through by the postman the other day. I had no post at all, but I got some bit of toot put through, and now I'm beginning to think, well, I wonder if that's official door-to-door mail. Is he just taking a bung from someone to shove their marketing stuff through my door?
I do see a lot of people walking the streets putting shitty little leaflets through doors, which are nothing to do with the Royal Mail.
Yeah, yeah.
I'd say a good rule of thumb is look at the company that's being advertised. Is there a likelihood that this company could afford to be distributed by the Royal Mail on mass scale?
Yeah, I suppose, yes, that's a very good point. It's not going to be some, bobber job.
Top's window cleaners, no.
Bobber job's guttering. They're not paying Royal Mail a fortune, are they, for door-to-door mail?
No, I wouldn't have thought so.
I mean, there's no incentive. This is what he doesn't understand. There's no incentive for you to do this. Is what's annoying me. He's not seeing the incentive that he needs to offer. And half a chicken wrap is just pathetic.
Trip, we started off this podcast talking about disproportionate anger.
Yes.
And it's triggered a memory of something that I was trying to repress.
Okay.
I know you're a big football fan, much more so than I am, but I am a Fulham follower.
Yeah.
I don't go as much as I'd like, but I still support the team. And I was disappointed the other week to see that we'd lost 1-0 to West Ham.
Okay, yeah. Fair enough. A disappointing result.
Yeah. Especially when you realise we had a penalty in the last minute of the game. The last kick of the ball could have equalised.
Yeah.
Are you familiar with the Panenka?
No. Don't know what this is.
Now, I'm willing to bet you do know what it is, but you are unfamiliar with the word Panenka.
I think I've seen the penalty, so I think I know what you're going to say. It's just like a little dink penalty.
Yes. And traditionally, you would blast a penalty left, right, up, down, high, low, middle, whatever. But the Panenka is this little cheeky dink you do. So the goalkeeper goes hurtling over to one side of his goal and you very cheekily just chip it very slowly into the back of the open net.
Yeah, I've seen this penalty. Absolute shit.
Now, I was so cross to see that this is what happened. It was Fulham's player, Ademola Lookman, he took the penalty. It's about the 98th minute, something ridiculous with like all the VAR added time.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
It's the last kick of the game and he opts for the Panenka.
Yeah, I know.
Don't get me wrong. I'm used to Fulham losing. I'm used to the disappointment. But with the last kick of the game, if he blasted it over the bar or the keeper had saved it or it hit the post, I'd have thought, shit, but, you know, that's life. To do that little cocky trick cost us a point and we're already going to be struggling for points this season. What a stupid thing to do.
Oh, I mean, honestly, I watched it. I mean, Scott Parker, your manager, he just sort of said, he knows what he's done. So, I mean, he feels bad, but, you know, he's...
I would give my players a bollocking if we were 5-0 up and won a penalty and it was the last kick of the game for doing the Panenka. Because it's a nasty thing to do anyway, because all it's trying to do is humiliate the goalkeeper. And if it goes wrong... Mm. Then no one looks a bigger twat than you.
Well, no, this is it. They said that in the sort of after the post-match analysis where they were saying, but the thing is, had it have gone in, Fulham fans would have hailed him as a hero, as a cocky little, you know, man doing it. But when it goes wrong, you look like an absolute twat.
I swear I would dock his wages for the week. Even if we were winning and he did it, because I think, no. That's a dreadful penalty. It's A, you're trying to humiliate the goalkeeper. B, if it goes wrong, no one will look more stupid than you. And why would you opt to do that when it's such crucial points? I don't understand.
I know. I mean, it's when a player does it, you know, I think some players can do it and they get away with it, but most players just blast it. Do you know what I mean? Like, I remember when Thierry Henry and, was it Robert Pires for Arsenal, tried some... Oh, it was some ludicrous penalty idea where rather than just shoot from the penalty spot, they passed it and it fucked up. They didn't score. And they just look ridiculous. You know, you just sort of think, oh, just place it, you know, whack it, whatever you need to do. Just get it in the net. Or at least, like, if this keeper saves it and you've blasted it, fair play, you know?
Absolutely. And I think also the West Ham goalkeeper, he not only saved it, I think he saved it lazily with one hand.
Well, I remember reading the BBC, I was following the match on the BBC text commentary, and it said something like, is it Fabianski? Is he the West Ham goalkeeper? Man. It said something like, Fabianski even had time to sort of catch it and then bounce it and catch it again, you know? It was such a poor penalty.
And I think not only that, I think he then rushed out and quite rightly took the piss and bollocked Lookman at the same time for being so stupid. To make myself feel better, I had to go on a YouTube rabbit hole of watching more famous footballers than Ademola Lookman doing the Panenka and having it go wrong. And he's in good company. It's happened to Cristiano Ronaldo, okay. Lionel Messi, big names.
Yeah, well, it's a difficult thing, but like Ronaldo and Messi, they probably probably made it work more times than they fucked it up.
Yeah, I was talking to my dad about it afterwards because he was really pissed off and disappointed. And he just said, well, I'm actually a little bit worried now because it might knock his confidence.
Yeah.
And I kind of thought, good, if his confidence level's at that height where he's doing that shit with last kick of the game when we're losing by one goal, then he probably does need to be brought back down to reality a little bit.
Have you ever missed a penalty yourself?
I don't remember. The thing with me, I was never very good at football. So if there was penalties to be taken, it would rarely come down to my responsibility to be trusted with taking it.
Well, I was shit at football as well, right? But I remember one match, because this is one of the pundits after that Fulham event was saying, a bit sexist in his remarks, but he said something like, any man should be able to score a penalty, right? So,
right.
So I was thinking back to my school days, and I remember being given the task of taking a penalty, not in a, like, it was just in a inter-class game or whatever it was. And I thought this would be easy. Run up, smash it. And I don't know what happened, but it was, I didn't try anything clever, but it moved so slowly. Like, I thought I'd whacked this ball and it moved so slowly. And the keeper was just able to just pick it up, really.
It was
so embarrassing.
Oh, that's a humiliating. So it didn't even trouble him. He didn't even dive. He just bent over and picked it up.
Yeah.
Oh, Trev.
I'll tell you what's most humiliating, and my mates have not let me forget this, was I was 1-on-1 against a goalkeeper, right? And now this is going to sound awful what I'm about to say, but he comes out of it well, right?
Okay.
So the guy in goal was, he was almost blind. Right. So I'm thinking, this is easy. And he saved it. That's how bad a footballer I was, that a blind goalkeeper was able to save my shots.
Oh, mate. I remember once, and you know how I'm quite well known for being a pedant, and I'll take things to their very literal conclusions when it's usually wrong and not fair or correct. I remember once I was playing football at primary school, and the goalkeeper caught the ball and he was standing on the line. I don't think it wasn't even me that took the shot, but I just sort of thought, and this was probably at an age where I didn't really understand the concept of fouling someone. I shoved him with all my might into the goal, and I pointed out to everybody else, the ball's behind the line, that's a goal. it didn't go well. I think many, many other boys chastised me for not knowing what a foul was. I think the goalkeeper who I shoved burst into tears. It was a bad day all round.
Well, there was a famous FA Cup final goal. I'm just looking it up now. The 1958 FA Cup final, Bolton Wanderers against Manchester United. And there's all this controversy because the second Bolton goal resulted from the Manchester United keeper, Harry Gregg, being bundled over the goal line. And the goal was given.
So I was onto something.
You were onto something. I tell you what, because I was shit at football, I was always put in with the, I mean, I cared about football, but I was shit at it. I always thought I'd have been a great footballer if I'd had the talent.
Right.
You know, I always felt I had a footballing brain. I could see what I needed to do, but I couldn't execute it.
Yeah.
So I'd always be put in with the people who either didn't give a shit or were even worse than I was. And that was so frustrating sometimes. We had this one kid who, he just picked up the ball in the penalty area. And the ref gave a penalty.
Yeah.
And he was like, what? And I mean, because I went to a school where teaching wasn't a necessity, the teachers were just there to shout at you. Like, they didn't actually teach you anything, right?
Yeah.
So the teacher didn't explain anything. So the penalty was given. And then about 10 minutes later, he did it again. He picked it up. And I think perhaps at that point, the teacher, or the referee stroke teacher, explained, because he thought anyone could pick the ball up in the penalty area.
Oh, bless you.
So, you know, it was like, you bloody idiot. And then we had another kid. This is the same kid I've told you before, the same kid who once in a French lesson couldn't give an answer. And the teacher said, just say anything, even if it's just bananas. And he went, bananas, right? So he was in goal and he was going to bowl the ball out. And he was standing right on the goal line. So, of course,
I can see what's happened already.
He's put his hand back, put the ball, and the ref's gone, goal. And he's gone, what? What? He's like, because she's standing right on the goal line, mate. Fucking idiot. So there we are. That's just about it for another Trev and Ben podcast. At this stage, we'd only give a few recommendations of things to watch or listen to as we're still in lockdown. It's probably a good thing to have something to look forward to.
Absolutely. What have you got for us?
It's a great series on Netflix called Undercover. It sort of does what it says on the tin. It's a couple of police officers undercover looking for some sort of drug sting.
Real life cases, or
I don't think it's a real life case. It's just a drama. It's on Netflix. It is a Flemish and Dutch production, but there's an English dubbed version. And actually, it's quite well dubbed. That normally annoys me when you can't see the sync happening, but it's quite well done. So that's well worth a watch. I've watched the first series. There are two series of that. Very well worth watching. The Crown is back.
Yeah, I don't really care about the royals, so I'll probably give that one a miss.
Okay, well, I've watched the first episode so far. It's very good. The actress who plays Diana is getting all the plaudits, and so far so good. So that's well worth a watch. And finally, just something to listen to. I've just come across this podcast. It's been going for ages, so you may well be aware of it already. It's called The Time Capsule, I think it's called.
Okay.
It's hosted by Michael Fenton Stevens, who's a comedy actor. You kind of recognise his face, but he basically talks to comedians, actors, whoever, and they get five items to put in a time capsule. And one of those items is an item they just want to get rid of. It's almost like Slightly Room 101 with the final item. But they can pick four items to go in a time capsule. And the best edition I've heard so far is David Mitchell. Very funny, well worth a listen if you like a good podcast once you've heard this. If you want to hear a good podcast, listen to that after you've heard this one.
I can vouch as well. I can't remember if you did this on our podcast or if you recommended it to me on the phone, but you were telling me about the Taskmaster podcast.
Yes, I've listened to most of those now.
Yeah, you do need to, if you're a fan of Taskmaster, make sure you watch the show before you listen to the podcast because it contains spoilers. But if you're a big fan of it, I can vouch for that. It's well worth a listen.
Yeah, absolutely. So there we are. That's it for this week. Thank you very much for listening and downloading. Don't forget you can get in touch with us anytime. We're at Trev and Ben on Twitter. Tell us about anything going on, anything you want us to talk about, anything you want us to watch or review, just let us know. And we'll catch you again this week. Till then, stay safe, stay well, and take it easy.
Bye.